New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
We're live.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to West by Pod, a podcast about WVU football, the Big 12 Conference, and sports washing. I'm Joel Bracken at WV Stats Guy, joined as always by my guy, Jordan Pinto. He's at Game Day Shorts. Jordan, how you doing, man?
Buddy, we're 12 days away. We're 12 days away. I could not be fucking better right now. Could not be better.
Christmas.
I was reading through the game information today. Got my section 123. We're gonna be rocking the blue and the stripes. So gonna have to start laying out some options there. Really, just make sure we got our game day fit down. Excited to see how these metal detectors go. Put new metal detectors at the stadium this year. So Hopefully it speeds things up and not slows things down. Obviously prepared with a plastic flask already. It's not gonna cause us any issues on that front. But yeah, 12 days out from fucking Penn State, man. Penn State.
It's come quick. I felt like there was some maybe in the last week, you're starting to feel a little fall in the air. Like, it's kind of cool. We're recording on the 19th. It's kind of cool this evening. It feels like you're getting past the heat of the summer. So, yeah, man, I'm excited. Well, today on this episode, we're breaking down Baylor. We're continuing our summer series, and we're really getting them all in here in the last week or two before the season starts. So our third to last game is Baylor. So before we get into them, any, topics or any sort of thing coming out of the fall camp? I guess the only thing I wanted to bring up was listening to Neil as he, gets all these questionnaires after practice and whatnot. I do sense more organization and more confidence in the process, I guess to say. Yeah. I've noticed him sort of going through and, they say, okay, well, how do you evaluate this? And, when do you do this? And he's like, got an answer. He's always been a good interviewer, but he's got a good answer. And like we know this because we have been around the block. Is this his sixth season now at WVU? I mean, he's a well-tenured coach now in Morgantown. I don't know. I'm sensing a little wisdom, I guess. Hey, I know how to run this football program at this point. That's just what I'm picking up from listening to him talk.
Yeah, I completely agree. He seems very, very confident. And it doesn't sound like, these interview questions, right? It's not like he's got like an answer written out in front of him. Like, it's just it's part of him now, it's been that long. And I have to imagine process wise, he circled the wagons last year, right? Like, did not do any outside hires, said, if this is going down, it's going to go down the way that I want it to go down. Mm-hmm. And so it had to have been, you know, vindicating for him last year of like, okay, look, we got this thing sorted out. And I think one of the things that's kind of stuck out to me, that definitely reflects what we saw on the field last year in these preseason interviews is just talking about, the identity of the program and the identity of the state and how, you know, it took him a while to kind of figure it out that that's the identity of the state does need to be the identity of the program, which has been true. I think going back for all of our most successful years, I mean, even the best years under Dana, right? The 10 wins in 2016 was a hard nosed blue collar, smash it down your throat football team. And it doesn't feel forced, you know, it feels authentic. Like, I mean, like, I think this is genuinely something where like he hadn't kind of had to grow into it. You know, coming from Troy, obviously a much smaller program. Not that we're king shit on the mountain or anything, but you know, like we're a pretty, you know, mid high level, power program. And there's different things that go with running it. And yeah. I think that he feels at ease, I think now with like what he needs to do. You know, with the people he has around him, I think he trusts his staff, you know, probably to a fault at this point. I mean, you know, like it seems like he feels really comfortable with everybody he's working with. So, yeah, I mean, this is, you know, I see people say, right, you know, 4 years to get your guys in, but it feels like this is truly his program at this point, and he seems good with it.
Yeah, we're mature down the line of, you know, this is his sort of deal now. Yeah, I mean, I agree with what you said about, you know, trusting his staff. And, you know, all we care about is the result on the field on Saturday. We don't see the, you know, relationship stuff. Like, you're dealing with, like, kids. You're dealing with donors. You're dealing with, you got to show up at the children's hospital and then go raise money again and then go to some kid's living room and ask them to come play. You know, like, it's a lot of stuff going on. I just, like, sensed a lot more confidence in him this year. Hopefully took a little time off in the summer. I mean, I can't imagine the grind, but obviously they're paid handsomely, and you know, and they have the opportunity to, everything's in front of them. So yeah, just happy to see that. It sounds good to me. I think I'm seems like he's just like got a calm to him. He's just like, you know what, we got what we got, and I think we're going to be all right.
Yep, 100%.
Cool. All right, let's talk Baylor.
Sure.
Let's get right into it. So, Baylor Bears. Last year, 3-9. Man, just not a good season. They were beaten pretty bad pretty often. Their best win was UCF, who was a lower half of the conference team, I think. They beat them by 1 point. They gave us a scare at the end of the season. And we'll remember that one fondly. Very fun one to win. It would have been a really rough one to lose. They lost to Houston. They lost to Texas State. I mean, we lost to Houston too, but whatever. They lost a lot of games and didn't really do much to instill confidence. I have for vibe around the program. I mean, all I can think is like, I can't think of a more up and down program than Baylor. Like, yeah. The highs and the lows are so close together. So over the last seven seasons, they've had three of them. They had three or less wins, but also in the last seven seasons, they've had 11 or more twice, which just doesn't make any sense. I mean, that's crazy. Dave Aranda is your head coach. You know, I think he was kind of the darling for a little bit of the conference, and everyone's like, wow, this dude, you know, he's infallible. And he's got a losing record as a head coach now. He's 23-25. I'd imagine the seat's warming up after sending in a 3-9 performance. So, yeah, that's what I'm seeing just as a state of the program. What are you thinking?
Yeah, absolute mess last year. I mean, you mentioned the UCF game. I don't know if you remember watching that game, but UCF was up like 35-7 in the fourth quarter. So they don't pull that out of their ass. They're staring at 2-10 with a 3-point win over Cincinnati and Long Island. I mean, it was just bad last year. You know, I think looking at some of the stats, it kind of surprised that it wasn't maybe a little bit better. But then like when you dig into some of the margin stuff, you know, the third downs are bad. And this is why this shit's important. You know, you're not just talking about rushing yards and passing yards and stuff like that. Third downs were bad. I think their red zone scoring, they were 128th out of 133 in red zone touchdown percentage last year. I think they only got a touchdown on like 46% of the red zone trips and only came away with points 74% of the time. So literally like one out of four times they get in the red zone, they weren't even scoring. So, you know, I think it was an exercise in why the margins are important for them. And they came out on the wrong side of a ton of them last year. Aranda, it has to be a winner else kind of a deal this year, I would think. I mean, if they go 3-9 or 4-8 again, I would imagine that he is out.
Yeah.
Because you're 3 years, you've caught lightning in a bottle in what was that, his first season? Or no, they went 2-10 his first season, caught lightning in a bottle, and then now you're below 500 each of the last 3 years. Or each of the last 2 years. So this would be a third year in a row where, yeah, if you have a subpar season, I can't imagine that they keep him around. So,
yeah, just an interesting school. I mean, like Matt Rhule did the same similar thing where he went from 1-11 to 11-3 in a 3-season span. Yeah. Aranda went 2-7 the first year as COVID and then went 12-2. But since then, 6-7 and 3-9. So, definitely a different vibe. I think the honeymoon period is over and, you know, results are what's going to stand. The expectation for this team this year, they're picked 12th out of 16 in the conference, so not great. I don't think Aranda survives if they finish 12th. Baylor's a program that has really seen some high highs. So I definitely don't think they are going to be comfortable having three consecutive losing seasons. Especially with the conference, you know, adding these new teams, and they're kind of just still floating to the bottom of that. I think that's an added element. So the team this year, returning production is 10th. Returning production is a metric. It is not a all-important metric because last year you were no good, and you're returning a lot of those guys. So 88th in beta rank offense, 109th in beta rank defense. Once again, that's opponent adjusted. That's really bad for a Power 4 program. We mentioned Aranda is the head coach, the offensive coordinator. You might have heard of him, Jake Spavital. Familiar face. He's coming over from Cal, and I definitely missed this news. I did not realize he was the OC until doing my homework. So he's your OC. DC is Matt Pallage, and this is his second season. So he was at the helm last year as well. All right, you want to get in some players?
I just want to note we make jokes about the coach bios every week. Conspicuously absent from Jake Spavital's bio is any mention of 4 years at Texas State, where they had one of the worst offenses in the country. They did not even. There's just a gap in his resume from 2022 to 2018 with us. So. But anyways, I just thought that was funny because we always talk about it. They couldn't spin that shit at all. It was just shitty.
I think I have a quote for our next episode on a good one I found, a good little quote excellent. in for the coordinators. Read some coordinator bios. They're good resume writers in there.
Probably just okay. AI now. Dude, they go to ChatGPT and they're just like, hey, make this guy sound good.
Here's just stats. Puff them up. Yeah. Okay, so let's get in the positionals. Let's start with quarterback. So last year, your quarterback was Blake Shapen. He left for Mississippi State. I wish there was like an index for evaluating transfers when you start at one place and transfer somewhere else and start there. Like Baylor to Mississippi State, is that an upgrade? Is that just a lateral move? Like, there's a lot of transfers that is just like power four or something like that. So Shapen, you know, he was a Baylor for a while, but changing it up, I guess, for his last year, going to Mississippi State. Your new quarterback, Sawyer Robertson, he was on the roster last year, but he's not, I don't think, going to be the starter. You're looking at Daquan Finn being the projected starter. How do you feel about Finn?
I like him, man. I think he's an upgrade. So transfer from Toledo, had a big year last year. PFF grades just going across the board. He was an 80.2 overall offensively, 77.5 pass grade, 68.9 run grade. But good player. I think the thing that jumped out to me, Baylor kind of struggled with explosive plays last year. I think they were 80th in explosive plays generated last year. Part of that was in the passing game. And you look at Finn's numbers, 5.6 big-time throw rate, 10.6 ADOT. Puts the ball into trouble a little bit, 4.2 turnover-worthy play rate is probably a little higher than you would like. But, you know, I think if you're doing self-evaluation, it looks like they went out and got a guy who can maybe push the ball down the field a little bit better than they did last year. Also does that without the expense of, you know, taking sacks. He actually has a 9.3 pressure to sack ratio, which is fourth among returning Big 12 quarterbacks. So, you know, even when folks get to him, they don't get him all that often. I think the running is where the upgrade is. You know, Shapen was fine as a passer, but he was not somebody who, especially in the design game, was going to have much of an impact. You know, I wouldn't say Finn is like an elite runner at the position, but he's super productive, both in the design game and as a scrambler. I think he had design carries. He had 65 for 362 and 4 touchdowns last year, and then 36 scrambles for 219 and 2 more touchdowns, plus 8 first downs. I always like to look at the first downs stat when looking at the scrambling numbers. So, I think he's an upgrade. I think he's going to give him a better chance at the position than Shapen did last year.
Yeah, I think you really said it there. I mean, Toledo, he was there for 5 years. So, you know, he's been around the block. And, you know, over his last three seasons was really when he was taking the bulk of the snaps. He had over 500 rushing yards in all three of those years. I was just looking at his, like, last year game log. His worst game of the year was probably expected, but against Illinois, their only power team that Toledo played, he had a 45 grade in that game, so not great. I think definitely an upgrade in the running department. Also, Blake Shapen was just, he had 6 fumbles last year. So, yeah. You know, when he tucked it, it wasn't really a good thing. So, I think he's going to be an upgrade. Good get in the portal for them. Moving to the running back room, you know, we talked about this team being 10th in returning production. So they're getting all three of these backs return this year. That's Dominic Richardson, Dawson Pendergrass, and Richard Reese. All three of them took over 70 snaps or 70 carries last year. And they kind of, at least PFF grades look kind of interchangeable to me. They're all in the low 70s, averaging in, you know, the mid to low 4 per carry. Any of these guys stand out to you, or you think this is just like a running back by committee situation?
Yeah, I think by committee. I think my note here was, I think I would just describe this as pretty much a league average running back room. Nothing crazy. None of these guys really hit explosive plays. I think the only distinguishing characteristic between the three of them is that Richardson and Pendergrass were targeted a lot out of the backfield. I think they had 56 targets combined. I think 30 and 26 was a split there. I think Reese only had like 8 or 9 targets. So when Reese is out there, I think it's probably more likely that he is either blocking or getting the ball on a handoff, whereas the other two, I think, can impact the passing game a little bit. But yeah, overall, just, I mean, kind of a, you know, like a C+, B- backfield, like nothing crazy. Kind of feel pretty similarly about the receivers. I don't know. Do you see anything there that stands out?
No, and that was kind of my problem, was looking back last year. You know, you get a lot of pieces back who made, you know, some plays. They're getting targets. But I have in my notes here, no single piece you're really that excited about. You got some guys who've done it. Your only dedicated pass catcher over 70 last year was a tight end, and he's not coming back. So that was sort of alarming to me, is that, you know, they used the running backs a little bit in the pass game, but you don't have a guy really coming back over like a 71 grade from PFF last year. Your top guy was Monterey Baldwin last year, and he's going to be returning. Otherwise, I do have a note here on the tight end. So they, like I said, last year, the tight end was pretty productive in the pass game. So they get a transfer in this year, Michael Trigg, from Ole Miss and USC. He didn't really contribute much at all at either of those schools. So, I don't know. I don't know if they really added a piece to this room that's going to pop it or make it much different than it was last year, because it was below average last year. Anybody here that you want to highlight?
No, I mean, Baldwin cooked us 2 years ago in Morgantown, you know, so we know that he can give you problems. He's a slot guy. But yeah, overall, yeah, I mean, yeah, no, I don't see anybody who moves the needle too much. You know, I think the big hit here is, so Drake Dabney was the tight end who I think you've been talking about. And then I think they had a tight end named Jake Roberts. Neither of those guys graduated or went to the NFL. Dabney transferred to TCU and Roberts transferred to Oklahoma. So, you know, I think that I like looking at stuff like that, just in terms of maybe, you know, those guys have 1 year left and they didn't want to spend it in Waco. Maybe a little bit telling, especially they transferred to rivals, right? I mean, TCU is a direct rival. Obviously Oklahoma was a long time rival. So, yeah, no, I mean, overall, I mean, I like Finn. I like Finn. But, yeah, the skill players, the skill talent around him, none of it is really, like, eye-catching.
I mean, you mentioned Mari Baldwin. I mean, other than him, I don't think there's a guy on this receiving corps that graded over a 64 last year returning. Yeah. So, I mean, just nobody that you're so glad came back, I think. Sure, some of these guys will improve. But, yeah, based on last year, not overly impressive room here. And just, you know, a note on their offense at all last year, in just the whole PFF offensive grade, they were second to last in the Big 12. So we mentioned this returning production thing, but, you know, for a full season timeline, really wasn't all that impressive. So moving to the offensive line, last year PFF has, they were fourth in the conference in pass block, eighth in run block. So, you know, pretty much just an average unit. I kind of generally think is Baylor, you know, sort of dominating with the offensive line, but, yeah, just really kind of smack dab in the middle last year. Looks like they have two transfers expected to start. Kurt Daneker from Ohio, who has six seasons of play time in Ohio, because we still have that in some of these guys. He's played six full, well, he's been in the game in six different seasons. This will be his seventh. And then you also have
Bowman to start a car rental service. Drive yes. up to meet each other for road games. It'll be great. It'll be a blast.
Yeah. Your other transfer you have coming into this line, Omar Igbedian.
I'm gonna let you take that one.
Yeah, that's a rough one, but he was actually really good coming from Montana State, so you know, stepping up a big caliber in skill here, but over an 85 grade last year at Montana State. So you know, somebody who's probably going to be able to contribute to this line. Otherwise, I think it's guys returning from last year.
Yeah, I think, you know, they bring both tackles back. One of them was good. Campbell Barrington had a 70.8 last year. One of them, Alvin Ebicelli, graded a 57. So you get those two guys back. I think the issue, you're replacing all three of the interior, so both guards in the center, including Clark Barrington, who I'm assuming is an older brother of Campbell, was the second highest graded center in the league last year behind Zach Frazier. So big hit there in the center of the line. The new guy coming in had some reserve duty last year, only graded out a 59.6. And then, yeah, like you said, the two guards are both taking a considerable step up in terms of the level of competition. Daneker really, you know, five of his 6 years were not good. He was good last year, 77.4 grade last year. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, because, yeah, like you said, you know, and I think going back to last year when we were doing this deep dive and talking about Baylor, that was the main reason why you and I were kind of lower on them than it seemed like a lot of the media was, is because, you know, you're going from having probably like three of the five best offensive linemen in the conference for the previous 2 years to losing all three of those guys. And like, it just seemed like nobody was expecting any drop off. So a little pat on the back for us for knowing ball. And yeah, I don't know. I just think it's going to be tough. You know, maybe the line's okay. You know, a seventh year senior, I can't imagine he's awful, like a negative player. And then the kid from Montana State might be kind of good. But I don't think it's going to sniff, you know, those lines that we were kind of accustomed to them having. I think it's probably just going to be, you know, another maybe above average kind of a group. you know, certainly not road graders out there, though.
Yeah. And just looking across the offense, I mean, I feel like the conversation is similar in terms of just where did they get so much better than last year? They weren't good last year. And where did they, like, greatly improve? I mean, continuity in the running back rooms there. Transfer quarterback, maybe a slight improvement. Receiver room, I don't really see it. O-line, it's not going to be drastically different, I don't think. Just nothing popping off.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what Spavital does, you know, because I think he has a history of doing a little bit of, you know, where it's a little more run heavy. And then obviously with us, just throw it up you, man, right? Like we, you know, we were throwing it downfield all the time and passing it all over the place. I don't really see the weapons to do that. So I'm curious to see kind of how they deploy that. It's Baylor. I don't really care for Baylor generally. So I certainly didn't go, you know, wading through the fucking cesspool on their message boards to kind of see what the buzz was in terms of, you know, what's Spavital going to do. So that's what I'm curious to see this year. You know, is he able to pull some strings and get some marginal improvement out of this group, or are they just kind of bad again?
Yeah. All right, let's flip the ball. Let's go defense now. So last year, yeah, the defense wasn't great either. 3rd from the bottom in conference, all around PFF defense. We mentioned 109th in beta rank adjusted defense. That's of all FBS programs. Yeah, that's of all FBS programs, opponent adjusted in the bottom, bottom 20, bottom 25. They were last in the conference in run D PFF. They were 3rd from last in the conference in coverage. So you can't stop them in the ground. You can't stop them through the air. Not fantastic. So you want to take the lead on the D-line? How are you feeling about them there?
Yeah, I think this is one of the few spots where they actually did have some turnover, and it's unfortunate because I actually think they had 3 pretty decent guys last year who were at least – you know, didn't maybe pop necessarily, but were long time workmen, like, you know, starters and contributors. Byron Vaughns, TJ Franklin, Gabe Hall. I feel like we were talking about those guys, or we've been talking about those guys for, you know, 4 or 5 years. So those guys have rotated out. Nose tackles back, Cooper Lands, 70.3 on 462 snaps last year. So he was a pretty good player. He's a pure block hog, you know, run defender at the nose. In terms of the other folks they have coming back, Trey Wilson stepping in as the starter defensive end, 52.3 last year with only 6 pressures and a sack as a rotation piece. And then at the 3 technique on the other side, Trevin Maye, 59.3 and only 5 pressures last year. So Brennan Brett, I think, is listed as the backup at the 3 technique. He was okay last year as a rotational piece. But you know, again, Not a high ceiling guy. I don't expect. Really, the only new face in terms of guys who weren't on the team last year, Tonga Lola Heya from Tyler JUCO. So JUCO guy. Don't have a real good feel for whether or not he's going to hit. He was only a 3-star transfer, so you know I don't expect it to be, you know, a world beater. And yeah, I just, you know, I think overall looking at this defensive line, you know, I see some workhorses, but I don't really see that guy who's going to, like, you know, jump out and get 7-8 sacks and get after the quarterback and, you know, do the things that defensive linemen need to do to really disrupt an offense. So I don't know. Yeah. I mean, low ceiling group, I think.
Yeah. I don't know. Are you counting Garmin Randolph as a D line kind of guy? I saw his, I mean, they run a multiple D, so.
Yeah. I had him as a linebacker, but he's definitely a, you know, he's like a pass rushing linebacker. Yeah. He plays what they call the jack. Dude, I love seeing these depth charts and seeing how everybody has a dog and a star and a spur and a, you know, whatever.
Money.
Yeah, money. But yeah, I think his analog for us would be the spur. You know, he's kind of like a hybrid linebacker, defensive end type. So, you know, I think if they go 4-man front, he'll probably be up on the line. If they go 3-man, he's probably more of an off-ball guy. Yeah, he's good. He was fine last year, I thought.
Yeah. I was going to say, if we're counting him on the D-line, he's probably your best. Or he's the one I wanted to highlight as a good return on the unit. I mean, you're losing your top 3 pressure guys. He's kind of your next guy up there of, you need him to take a big step. He's a 71.9. And I mean, you know, a lot of these PFF grades, we run through these teams, and when you're trying to highlight that the best guy potentially in a unit was a 70, almost a 72 PFF grade, like, that's not a great sign for the unit as a whole. You know, that's sort of just what this defense was giving you last year. So, we're talking about Garmin Randolph there, moving kind of into the linebacking core. You're returning your guys, but I don't think, at least PFF was not very kind to the Matt Jones and Brooks Miller. I think they were both in the 50s last year, which is below replacement for PFF. So that's sort of what you're looking at in the middle of the defense there. I don't think it's that great of a unit.
Yeah, rotation guys aren't good either. Jeremy Evans and Josh White also both graded out in the 50s on over 100 snaps. So, you know, enough, you know, they're playing 8-10 snaps a game. And didn't pop. They were bad last year. Linebackers were bad last year.
Drink.
Probably going to be bad again this year. Yeah.
Yeah. Take a drink when we say they weren't good last year. So moving to the secondary.
It's a Cincinnati pod here where it's just like, we're moving through it quick because it's just like, they kind of sucked and they're probably going to continue to suck. So,
Team's only won with Cincinnati. I mean, that's where we're at. So, I will say, looking at the DBs, I do think you have two bright spots here. You know, as a unit, PFF ranked them the third from last in the conference and coverage grade. But Caden Jenkins and Carl Williams are both returning. Those are your cornerbacks. 76 grade for Caden Jenkins last year. Carl Williams was a 77. And they also add a guy, Kendrick Simpkins, from Western Kentucky. And he's the kind of guy I love to look at a profile because it's a better every year kind of guy. It's like you look at the grade and the snap count and the usage, and it's just like more, 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 more. So he's a potential like bright spot in the, you know, transfer portion. He's your only transfer starter, it's looking like, on D.
I like the Simpkins call out. Yeah, I like seeing that too when it's like a guy, you know, grows into a role, right? And I think, you know, you looked at him at Western last year, I don't even think he started as the starter, but then like the last six games of the year he's starting, right? So it's like clearly a guy who's played his way onto the field. Expect him to be at least a serviceable starter. Williams and Jenkins, the two guys you singled out, man, I think it's also worth noting, both true freshmen last year putting up high 70s grades. So like, you know, I think you can reasonably expect some improvement there. They were good last year in their first go at it. I would expect them to be better this year. The other two guys who I think you got to call out, Devin Bobby and DJ Coleman, had 67 and 72 PFF grades last year as first year contributors. It looks like they're going to kind of be the rotation at their version of the cat safety for us, you know, kind of like the field safety. And so, you know, maybe expect them to be a little bit better as well. I think, you know, overall, you're looking at this defense. Secondary is the obvious strength on paper. I expect them to be the strength on the field, too, just in terms of the development profile. Like, we're talking about a lot of young guys who did pretty well in their first snaps last year. So, you know, I think you can be confident that they're going to be as good or better this year. But, yeah, man, that front six might just be bad, bad, bad. I'm just not seeing anybody who, like, who pops at all, you know, like where are the playmakers in the front six?
Yeah. Yeah. So tell me, give me your best elevator pitch of why it's going to work this year for Baylor. If it works, why is it going to work?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think maybe the offensive line hits and Spavital was able to pull some strings and Finn is like a pretty significant upgrade over what Shapen was. You know, I think that's probably what they have to be hoping for. Yeah, I mean, I don't see a whole lot of indicators that this defense would be significantly improved. But, you know, I think this is a point we make a lot, right? When you're 109th, if you can even get up to like 60th, right, where you're still not a good defense, but you're just not a god awful shitty one, like that could, you know, that could make a big difference as well in the close games. But yeah, with the Finn thing, especially, you know, I referenced the really shitty red zone. You know, I think having a quarterback who can run the ball really helps with stuff like that. It gives you so many more options. You know, you can get them out on the edge on a rollout, and if nothing's there, right, you don't have to take a shitty turnover. You don't have to do. He can just put his head down and kick a field goal, or maybe even get into the end zone. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm not super optimistic that it's going to be way, way better, but you know, I think that that would kind of be the path that I would look at.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think my downside pitch is that it's the same team as last year with, you know, a couple ins and outs, but I think your vision here is secondary is a lockdown, offensive line's good, scheme on offense has improved, and you're Kansas State at home. You are the team that has no all Big 12 players, but you play well as a team because Kansas State and Baylor both have no players who are in the all Big 12 list. They got no individual guys who pop and shine above all. Kansas State's just like pretty damn good at most positions, and you know that's where Baylor wants to get to is to
I wouldn't hold my breath.
Yeah, well, Aranda's going to be probably coaching for his job, so
that is true. Yeah, I mean
we'll see, you know, back against the wall what they got.
Yeah, we got a great case study in it last year, so yeah, who knows.
Let's climb index them. Cohesion, I mean, I gave him a 4. It's the, the guy beside you, but once again, we said it, they weren't all that great last year. But I gave him a 4.
I gave him a 3.5 for the same reason, right? You bring lots of guys back. But yeah, they weren't necessarily good guys. I think probably the reason I didn't give it a 4 is because of those 3 defensive linemen that they lost. I thought those were all pretty proven players at this level, and you're kind of replacing them with some unproven guys who couldn't beat out those guys last year that were, you know, okay. So yeah, 3.5.
Losses. Who'd they lose and how valuable was it basically? I gave them a 3.5. I mean, I think you sort of your quarterback, like you lost your starting quarterback, but you might like the new one better. You lost the defensive line pieces, but I don't think you lost anything that you're like, oh no, we can't replicate what we did last year because, yeah, you're hoping to be better than last year.
I said 3. I think maybe I'm a little bit lower because I think losing those 2 tight ends who were both pretty good players, and not only losing them but losing them to the portal to rivals, you know, those are the true losses, right? We've said that on a couple other pods. And so, yeah, no, I think 3 out of 5, like nothing insane that you lose that you know, theoretically can't replace. You know, it's not like you lost a first round draft pick anywhere, but, yeah, reset in both trenches. You know, I think you lose enough on the offensive and defensive lines that it's concerning. And then the tight ends.
Yeah. The infusion portion here. So who did they get in? So I'm looking at offense. They have 4 projected starters who are transfers, 1 on defense. I went with a 3. I could maybe go 3.5. You know, you got maybe a bump of an upgrade at quarterback. You maybe have an offensive lineman you like from Montana State, and this free safety, Simpkins, might be a nice addition. After kind of just a dull, bland year, I would have loved to see, you know, another piece or two, but, you know, I think there's some guys who definitely could pan out and be valuable in this team.
I gave him a 4, man. I like the pulls on both sides of the ball, man. I'm a big Finn fan. I think he's going to be a firm upgrade over Shapen. The running ability adds a dimension to the offense that they haven't had, really since, I'm blanking on the guy, Gary Bohannon. Mm-hmm. Who for whatever reason they moved on from. I thought he was a good player. I like Michael Trigg is the tight end is a flyer worthy addition. I think you mentioned USC and Ole Miss. Like, the guy has pedigree. He was either a 4-star or 5-star coming out of high school. I can't remember, but he was very highly regarded. So you know there's talent there, but he just hasn't been able to translate it to the field. And then, yeah, you mentioned the free safety. I also like the 2 offensive line guys. I mean, you pluck 2 quality starters from lower level offensive lines. I mean, we'll see if they can make the adjustment, but you can see what they were going for, I think, with all the additions. So I gave them a 4 out of 5.
Okay. And then the menu. So what's their schedule looking like? Real quick, they're out of conference. They start with Tarleton. Then they have the dreaded at Utah out of conference game against a conference opponent. That's a really bad one to draw this year. Then Air Force conference play. You got Colorado, BYU, Iowa State,
Texas Tech, Oklahoma State, TCU, WVU, Houston, Kansas. So notably dodging Kansas State. I give them a 2.5. I think rough bonus game versus Utah, 10 conference games, Kansas, WVU, Oklahoma State, like, there's going to be, you don't get any of the new guys except for Colorado. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if the schedule's going to pan out very well for them.
Tricky one with Air Force too, right? I mean, you get them at home, but Air Force plays weird. So, you know, I mean, we've been talking about the front six, right? Like, you could just see Air Force eating that front six alive. Just running for 4 yards of play every single time. So, I gave him a three. I wasn't, I guess, quite as low. Yeah, Utah out of conference is shitty, though. I mean, that's tough.
That sucks. At Utah. Yeah. I mean, that's your first real game after Tarleton. So,
yeah.
Do you have anything clever for the benefactor for Baylor?
Westboro Baptist Church.
Oh, you want to elaborate or just
it's cult-like, don't support what they stand for. Baylor cult-like, don't support what they stand for.
All right. I'm in. I like it. Okay. I gave them, it could either be Madden, the Madden franchise, or EA Sports in general. You know, we're advertising this new game. It's an upgrade, but you pull back the curtains and it's really the same old thing as the year before, and you just wish it were better.
That's good. Yeah. Just releasing the same iteration of the same game every year. Like it.
I said, what if we brought everybody back and expected things to be better?
Yeah. 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 We're going to find out.
Yeah. All right. Do we play at Baylor, or is this a home game for us this year? It's in Morgantown.
Home, yeah.
November 16th. So this is our third to last game. You know, hopefully they're not playing for much at this point, and it's a quick one.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe a freshly fired coach. Who knows?
Oh, I don't know if I want to... I don't want to play
too freshly. That's what I was going to say. Yeah, not too freshly. Like, hopefully he gets fired if they start like 0-7. Gets fired
I want to beat him, and then the rumblings be like, yeah, he might not make it to the end of the week.
That's
like,
better. Yeah, that'd be better. Yep.
That's the real low point. All right. So that's Baylor. Yeah. So we are going to keep the deep dive series going. We got two more. I know our next one is UCF. So make sure you tune into that. We have all the other teams West Virginia is going to play this year in the episodes prior, if you want to check those out. You can find us on Twitter. We're at West by Pod with underscores. Probably get the Twitter a little more active as the season's getting into to swing here. So be sure to follow us. Find us on Discord and the Smoking Musket Discord, and get in there for all the game watches and just all the good stuff. So. Other than that, thanks as always for listening, and we'll catch you in the next one.
All right, gang. Take care.
New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hessilo V2, and all new Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.